Two, one. Okay, so it's 7 o'clock and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, and we're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And
you know what's going to happen?
The rest
now?
Of the show.
Yeah. Well, this is an important part of the show, because last week you and I were talking about the history and broadcasting and and education, and we were talking a little bit about the calls to action. Well, CFRC has been for many years working on indigenous knowledge, sharing, celebrating all of the good things. Every Tuesday night at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah, come on, you've been here for 31 years. Stop it. Yeah, you know that. But what I have for you is a look back.
Oh, yeah, a retrospective.
Yeah, because it was not that long ago. It was 2022.
All right.
Yeah. Right here at
the
CFRC.
Dark times.
Right here at CFRC and out on the foyer, out on the grass.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
I was here for that.
You and I.
You know what the best part was?
We sat and watched.
Yeah, we sat and watched. Like, the best part was, like, almost kind of the best part was that they gave us our own chairs. We did not have to. We didn't have to fight. Get off my chair, you. That's
chair.
My chair.
Yeah. Now, you wouldn't let me sit where you were. Yeah, you said Sean and I was about to sit down. You can't sit there. That's my chair. Yeah, you're funny.
Like, there was not even, like, you know, when you go someplace, maybe you go to the movies. Like, back in the day.
Yeah, you can
like,
number.
Like, not now. Mm-hmm. Because you can just buy your seat, right? But before, like, you had to get there early.
Right.
You had to get there early, and this was, drilled into me from Dad. And, we got to get there early to get a good seat.
Right.
And so we'd get there maybe 20 minutes, half hour early, sometimes an hour, because I don't know. Dad liked to read the book.
Oh, is that right?
Anyways, okay. Yeah. or talk or something. Yeah. Anyways, we would go, and we would sit there and we would wait for the movie. And sometimes you had to get up and go, so you put your sweater
on your seat.
You put your sweater, maybe you put something else there, and then that would be like, well, save your seat, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it was moved.
And then you come back and somebody's moved it to six rows back.
Just threw it out of the way. Anyway, so you get your good seats. Anyways, you don't have to do that now. But here at the CFRC deal, they put our names on.
That's it.
And they spelled mine right, which was awesome.
Oh, yes.
Because I hate it when people say, I would have had words. I'd had words. I'd had words with them and said, "Listen,
you would have gone looking for yours."
Why did they set me this far away from Doug?
Yeah,
who's that one?
Yeah. Anyway, all right.
So that's Sean. I'm
going to take everybody to that point, because it does. We talks about land acknowledgement. History of CFRC, and in it there are people who are talking about what happened around here as Indigenous knowledge was being shared on the air. So, you all said?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I also have a guest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, who worked on a project in 2014.
2014? Yeah, which one's that?
You're going to have to listen to CFRC to find out. You ready?
Oh.
Here we go. And start with my voice.
Okay, go.
Here we go. Aboriginal Voices, Sean. It is a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Sunny, anyway. And, you know, it was about 15, 16 degrees Celsius. So that's the way to have the day start.
Mm-hmm.
At least our show start, yeah. And how's your weekend? You know, this was a long weekend that we had. And were you able to get out and enjoy the outdoors and...
It was wonderful, Douglas.
Good. Did you go out and do any of the work in the garden, or were you having...
No.
Okay. I had a couple of people mention that they spent a lot of time on Saturday and part of Sunday getting ready for the food for the weekend, but they were actually out taking squash and carrots out of their garden to mm-hmm. come into the kitchen. So
that was not me.
No? No, okay. I just wondered, never know. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see the kinds of foods people talk about over the next couple of weeks, because that the whole idea of back in the spring when we talked about taking the seeds out of the seeds we had stored over the winter and planting them in our gardens mm-hmm. and how people were doing all their different gardens throughout the year. And now we'll find out what kind of sort of produce we have for everybody. But it comes to mind, how do we store a lot of the foods that we have? Onions, garlic, carrots, turnip, beets, that, you know. I don't know how you store corn other than you kind of blanch it and freeze it. But do you have any ideas there on that line?
As far as I understand, you keep it in a cool place,
mm-hmm.
basement, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess if you are an old person, and by old I mean like the ones that are way older than us,
mm-hmm.
Who probably have a root cellar.
Oh, okay, a root cellar, yeah.
Or, you know, those hipster millennials that have a root cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, they dig down and they build a root cellar, which is cool in its own way, right?
It is, yeah.
But I had seen on one of those, I think it might have been an email or something like that, that some Swedish company over there in Sweden, it may not even been Sweden. It might have been Finland or
mm-hmm.
Like Iceland or something like that. And they built these kind of a dome with steps in it.
Okay.
Like steps going down, but you take this, you buy this dome, and then you buy a great big steam shovel,
mm-hmm.
and you dig a big hole, and you put this thing into it. And I don't know, it's some kind of a space age plastic. You know, this was back when plastic was okay,
mm-hmm.
but now like everybody's freaking out about plastic. And then you put it in the ground and bury it. And there you go. Yeah, well, you put a door on it.
And okay.
There you go. You got a root cellar. And then you, when you open that door, you can climb down those stairs. Well, I guess you wouldn't climb down the stairs.
You just walk
but you
in.
You can just, you know, go down the stairs. There's like shelves and stuff like that in there. And you can put your produce in there.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's cool. It's yeah. all like scientific and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. It sounds like
at least that's the way they like to say.
It sounds to me like it's an upside down swimming pool.
Well, it could be, mm-hmm. and maybe the swimming pool people are into that sort of thing.
Right.
So that's the material, like those in ground pools.
Right.
It would be that sort of material. I guess that's fiberglass.
Yeah, I wonder how big he would really need it.
I just said plastic to make all the, yeah. You know, them other people.
No, not at all. Not you.
Me, make people upset?
Yeah. Well, that would be better than, you know, using rocks to form your arch and dome under the ground. Because water would eventually seep down, right, into the...
That's probably what they're thinking.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a great idea. Someone else mentioned about using the area underneath the front step that they have. But I kept thinking, you know, underneath my front steps, it gets really, really cold. So I'm not sure I would want my root cellar to be underneath the front step. I don't think it's deep enough, right? Anyway, but I have heard people talk about putting barrels of sandy soil into their basement, and then burying their potatoes or onions or turnips and that sort of thing in a bit of soil just to cover them. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. I know some people who did that for a while, but they did it outside in their barn. And so there was an area of the barn underneath the grain bins where they had someone 200 years ago maybe had already put in what was a root cellar under there. And they went down and put everything in sand, in barrels, sort of the half cut, you know, like you take a pickle barrel and you cut it in half, and so you've got this half barrel, right? And you put, and they use that, so one for potatoes and one for carrots and onions, and they all just stayed out there. And all you did was walk in and dig in, pick you want what you wanted, but then you'd have to wash them all up as you go into the kitchen. So anyway, that was a thought. That's similar to your root cellar, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wonder too, you know, the guy, have you done any dehydrating? You know,
I have dehydrated.
Oh, you have. So, is that a successful way to keep some of the foods?
Some of them, yes. You do, like, you go and buy this food dehydrator, and you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to dehydrate everything. And you use it maybe a half a dozen times, and then you put it in the basement, and it collects stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know I've dehydrated.
I admit it. It is a very fun and cool the first half dozen times. Then after that, it becomes something of a chore, and you don't want to do it anymore.
Oh, is that right? It takes too long?
It takes a considerable amount of time.
Mm.
For the size of dehydrator, it takes a considerable amount of time to dehydrate whatever it is you're putting in there.
Mm.
Now, they send you along like a little recipe book or something like that. Oh, here, make your own beef jerky. But after you get done all of that, it's like, well, I could just go to like the store and purchase some beef jerky. And then I taste my beef jerky. Okay, that was great. And now I'm don't need beef jerky for another 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. I did apples and pears and peaches.
Yeah, I've done all of those things.
Yeah. They seem to be the easiest to do because they're water and you're extracting the water from them, and they still taste like the item that you put in there, right?
Yeah. Tomatoes.
Mm.
I've noticed, though it doesn't really turn out well. What else? Mushrooms.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. You could. I mean, conceivably, you could go ahead and dry your mushrooms.
What about things like peppers, green and red peppers?
Well,
are they any good that way?
Honestly, I think you could probably dry them yourself in the basement, couldn't you?
I don't know.
Without the dehydrator. Now, there was plans on some website of making your own dehydrator.
Mm-hmm.
And you build yourself like a box out of, I don't know, wood or something like that. And you put a light bulb in there.
Mm.
And you put a fan in there somehow. And you have an area for it to exit. So then you basically have a food dehydrator, and you can make it as large as you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay, so there, we've got a root cellar, you have dehydrators, freezers. A lot of people do that. They get their product and then they freeze it. And so that's good. Now, the other thing I was wondering about is since it's October and it's sort of the harvest time, what kinds of things did you hear about from your interaction with people this last past weekend for Thanksgiving weekend? What kinds of foods did you hear people talk about?
Oh, gosh, Doug.
Well, everybody's got something they talk about.
I don't know.
No?
You know, carrots, beans, lots of beans.
Mm-hmm.
Squash, of course. Onions. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And here's my question for you that I've been asking people.
Oh,
because
gosh,
potatoes. How do you like to cook your potatoes with the turkey?
I don't know, but I'm going to tell you, and you're going to say it's wrong.
Nah, I won't do that. I'm looking for new ideas.
Well, here's a question. How do you make your potatoes?
I do one set that are mashed potatoes with a little bit of butter, and I whip them.
Only a little bit?
Yeah, not a lot. And, well, a little bit of milk and butter goes in it. I warm it before I put it in.
Oh, of course you do.
Yeah, well, it just makes the...
Perfectionist you are.
No, it just keeps the potatoes from cooling down fast. That's all, I think. And then serve them right away. But I also like to do baked potatoes in wedges. So I cut the potatoes into wedges and mm-hmm. a little bit of oil, and I usually put Herbe de Provence on it. So,
of course.
Well, it is something I learned when I was traveling, and it's really nice that way because you just coat it with the oil and the herbs, and then lay it on a baking sheet and just toss it in the oven. As everything else is finishing up, your potatoes will cook about 20 minutes or so, and they're roasted. You can turn them once in the whole time, but you really don't have to worry about them. And they come out roasted wedges. So, now, how do you like your potatoes?
Mashed.
Mm. Do you put any?
Roasted. You know what, Doug? Roasted, fried, mashed. French fried.
Ooh.
Like all of those.
Mm-hmm. And what about things, other vegetables like sprouts, Brussels sprouts?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Do you like those?
Oh, yeah, they're very appealing. Roasted.
Roasted,
Yeah, you do a roasted Brussels sprout with your herbs and spices and all that. Butter. And you're having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds great. So we'll let the listeners add to this. If they want to, they could write to us, email at aboriginalvoices@cfrc.ca. And Sean, you and I had an opportunity last Friday to participate in the CFRC. Celebration, I guess, the 100th anniversary or the dedication of...
Yes.
That
you don't remember, you were there.
Yeah. So what do you remember from it all?
Well, I remember the first thing was meeting you, because we, both of us, we traveled in the same vehicle because we did not get, VIP parking.
Mm-hmm.
Nor did we get anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had... Wait. You had a seat with your name on it.
See, why is it, Doug, that you always have to mess up my stories?
Oh, well, you said you got nothing.
So we get there, and, there's chairs. It's over on the... was that the south side?
Mm-hmm.
South side of Crothers Hall in the... the park area.
Right.
I don't know what you call that, but the park area on the south side, under some trees. which was rather delightful. And you got the Queen's CFRC official tent booth thing with Chance, I believe his name is, under it. And got some electronic gear, and he's broadcasting things, which was cool. And well, there was chairs, and you said, "Oh, they're." You said, "Oh, they're reserved."
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, that's like for other people. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I was gonna say to you that let's go pick the back row near the end.
It's like that sucks. Now we gotta go to the back row, and I thought, well, no, I'm gonna take one of those reserve spots. Well, when I get up there, and they're saying, reserved, and my name. Like, what's this? That's the coolest thing ever. Like, you know, like CFRC, been around here 100 years. Mm-hmm. All right. But they gave me a reserved seat.
Isn't that something?
At this celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Like as though, well, I don't know. They did that, and it was like the coolest thing ever. I took my reserved seat.
And you were actually in the second row, front.
Yeah, I was right behind Ted. I was right behind Ted Hsu.
Right.
Yeah. It is Hsu, right?
Yes.
Ted Hsu, and if folks at home don't know who that is, he's like a member of...
He's a member of the Ontario Legislature
now. That's right. Yeah. The Ontario, I was going to say Parliament, but I was like, no, it is not.
He was.
He's up there with the Doug Ford type
shit. That's right, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's pretty neat. That's him. Then there was this lady?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mrs.? I don't know. Person?
Yes,
female?
She was from...
You know what I'm getting at, Doug.
Yeah, she was from the staff for...
No, wait.
Yep.
And her name was, I think, Colby.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there for the Mark Gerritsen. And he was unable to make it. And later on, I figured out why he probably didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways... cool. He couldn't make it. Unfortunate. But then right next to her was, I don't know, was it Brian?
Yes, Brian Patterson. Yes.
Yes. Or was there somebody in between them? Wasn't there? I don't remember really.
Mm-hmm.
They were right in front of me and I don't remember. but there was the Brian Patterson. He's like the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Of Kingston?
Yes.
For the folks who were listening, like he was there, so that was kind of neat. I don't know. There was other people there. Mm-hmm. You name the rest, Doug.
Well, I know that the principal for Queen's University, Patrick Dean, was there.
Oh, yeah, he was there.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the fellow's name who came. He was invited from a special organization that helps fund national radios.
Fernandez. That was Fernandez.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then there was, other people.
Yeah. And
I won't name them.
Okay.
But the celebration was kicked off by... Dinah, she started out like with her speech,
mm-hmm.
and she started out her speech, and she did the "You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM."
Yeah, we have to tell folks that Dinah is the operations manager. Yeah, she's in charge of the place.
I'm pretty sure people know who Dinah is.
Yeah, they listen to
Why
our shows.
Why would they not know who she is?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some people in some communities way off that don't know anything about a 100-year-old radio station.
But anyways, it was, by and large, like the the coolest and best way to start off a speech about the the mighty CFRC.
Mm-hmm.
There was other ways, other directions that could have went in, but no, she picked the coolest one, and accolades to her. Here, clapping.
Yeah.
But in any case, we clapped yesterday. Well, I started off the clapping. I want everybody to know that it was me
that started it.
Started that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. I had a great time. The speeches,
mm-hmm.
Maybe it tugged a bit at the old heartstrings.
Mm.
I don't know, maybe not. And they were short, which was wonderful. They were very short, actually.
But we're actually going to be able to hear one or two of those.
We?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, because you have the Ted. He was good.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about his brother. I didn't realize that Ted fella went to Queens.
Mm-hmm.
He never really mentioned what he studied.
Economics.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. He was an economics guy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. All right.
And to add to that, he's a professor at Queens University now. Well, he has been for a while.
He's got two jobs?
Yes, yeah.
Well, what's he need two jobs for? Let somebody else have a job.
Well, I think he's doing his social services. He's trying to make changes to the way things are happening in our world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't that why they go into politics?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't.
We do it a different way. We talk about it, and we go and introduce people and let them have their voice. So, if you would like, I have.
I think that they go into politics because of the pension plan.
Well, you have to be there a long time to get a pension plan.
Really?
Yeah.
That was like 5 years.
Eight years, and then.
Oh my gosh!
You get a minimum pension, okay, and then
65. Just go for the full thing.
Yeah.
8 years, 10 years, whatever it is.
That's it.
A lot less than having to go to work every day.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Anyways, I say that in jest, Ted.
Yeah. Well, I've got...
So Ted's listening to our show.
I have for you...
If he is, what's our email? Ted, send us an email.
aboriginalvoices@cfrc.ca.
And you know that Colby, she could too.
Okay, yeah, she did a lovely speech, and she presented it well.
Yeah, like I said earlier, well, I think when we were driving home, like she had the best one. Like, well, not her, like Mark mm-hmm. Gerritsen had the best one, and then I thought, well, she was the one likely wrote it.
Well, let's go to that right now. We're going to hear Dinah first, and then the speech that Mark Gerritsen gave or was to give.
But thank you so much for joining us on this special occasion. Before we get started on this milestone day in local, campus, and national broadcasting history, I'd like to take the opportunity to acknowledge that we are gathered together on traditional Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory, and all of us at CFRC are incredibly grateful to be able to live, learn, create, and to collaborate on these lands and provide truly inclusive opportunities for Queens and community members to share in these endeavors. It's also a pleasure and privilege to welcome each of you here with us today in person and also welcome our listeners, including many alumni who are listening right now to our live broadcast worldwide via CFRC.ca. And I'd like to now introduce Daniel Beals, Radio Queens University Board of Directors, to really get our celebration started.
All right. Thanks, Dinah. Welcome, everyone. It's been really great to have such a good turnout and great to have a chance to talk to some people beforehand and just sort of get some background information on who's here and why you're here. We're pleased to welcome several esteemed guest speakers today to our event, including Queen's Principal and Vice Chancellor Patrick Dean. Thank you for being here. City of Kingston Mayor Brian Patterson, thank you. From Mark Gerritsen's office, Colby, I forget your last name, Colby.
Colby Pereira.
Colby Pereira. So I apologize, Colby. and Ted Chu, who is our member of provincial parliament. Thank you for being here. Also today, we'll have and former CFRC station manager Steve Cutway, who I did have a good chance to talk to. Now, let's get on with the celebration.
Thank you very much, Daniel. And now, to get things motivated, I would like to invite Queen's Principal and Vice Chancellor Patrick Dean to join us up here to make a few remarks on behalf of Queen's University. Thank you, Patrick.
Well, thanks very much, Dina. Good afternoon, everybody. It really is wonderful to be with you all here, and I'm humbled to think of the history that's assembled here in front of me. 100 years is a remarkable period of time for any kind of technology-based human activity, and the CFRC is thriving and a critical part of this community, university community, and the broader community still after 100 years is absolutely amazing to think of, especially when you think of the way in which technology has changed over time. Radio still has an important place, and campus-based radio still has a critically important place in building and maintaining good communities like this one. Before I came over, I was just actually looking in the history of Canadian broadcasting at some of the details about this. So CFRC essentially begins with Professor Gill in 1902 doing a demonstration of wireless telegraphy at Convocation. And then by 1919, it established the Wireless Club here. And then in 1922, we went live and the equipment was all here. What an amazing history that is, and to think of the extent to which the scientific life of the university gave rise to this critically important part of our human experience of Queen's and Kingston. So it's wonderful to be here. Also to reflect on the opportunities that CFRC has provided to students over the years, in addition to their studies, to get practical experience in broadcasting, in the community work that comes along with it, and to provide access to a wide range of people from different backgrounds who could get involved in this work. It's really wonderful. It's exciting. I'm delighted to be here and to congratulate everyone who's historically been engaged in advancing this, to our present leadership. Congratulations and happy birthday to everybody.
So now I'd like to take the opportunity to invite the Minister of Parliament for Kingston and the Islands, Mark Gerritsen's representative, Colby Pereira, up now for a few moments to share Mark's thoughts about CFRC on this historic day. Thank you so much.
Hello and good afternoon, everyone. As Member of Parliament for Kingston and the Islands, I am glad to be included in today's gathering to unveil CFRC's centennial plaque and celebrate its 100 years of broadcasting. I am so sorry I am unexpectedly not able to join you in person, as I would have loved to be here to celebrate and mark this momentous occasion. Although the world has changed exponentially since CFRC's founding in 1922, the station's commitment to sharing local and national news and keeping the community informed through shared listening has remained steadfast. I am impressed by the way CFRC has evolved to reflect the ways in which our country has changed and become more diverse and connected globally, as well as maintaining strong local roots by always amplifying Queen's and Kingston's leaders. I want to take a moment to thank the number of volunteers over the century that have dedicated time and effort to ensuring CFRC can continue as a not-for-profit radio station, as well as those who have worked to make today happen. This work was particularly exceptional throughout the pandemic, where I know for a fact that CFRC volunteers kept the community informed and entertained, while also keeping us connected by promoting virtual exhibits, concerts, film festivals, and local artists. I am thrilled to celebrate and congratulate you on 100 years of CFRC broadcasting today, and I hope we are listening for another 100 years to come. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you, Colby.
And great staff have been working together for a really, really long time to just keep the station operations running, and it's a real pleasure to have them with me every single day working on stuff. But also, our volunteers that just come in and do so much to bring their creativity and their ideas to our airwaves too, and we couldn't do it without their support too. So thank you for the surprise flowers. This is really, I feel all misty. Thank you.
CFRC
101.9
FM.
Well, Sean, there we go. We did have a very interesting look back at CFRC's history. And, you know, it's amazing that number of things that we've been able to do here at Aboriginal Voices in the last 31 years. And it's looking at all of the changes that have been happening, I think it's important to do some reflections. And our next guest is is going to be talking about her reflection about the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women series that we put together here at CFRC on Aboriginal Voices, and it was called Our Stolen Sisters. And the project was put together with the guidance of the Aboriginal Student Center here at Queen's University, and we actually had a fair number of young women involved in helping us with the project. And one of the people who did get involved is a teacher, Carolyn DeGroot. And she was a teacher of grade 5, grade 6 age students when I worked with her at that time. And it's interesting, too, because we collaboratively brought in people who were from First Nations communities or with information that would help with the students' understanding of issues. So I wanted to get Carolyn's reflection on being part of our Stolen Sisters project, but also the impact that the work that she had with students and the impact on her. So we're all set to do that, and here we go. Carolyn, how are you?
I'm fine.
There you are. Eh? Yeah. Well, here we are on a nice rainy day in September of 2022. Yes. And you and I are going to have a chat about the impact of your involvement in assisting and then being part of Aboriginal Voices radio show at Queen's University, CFRC. And, you know, we're going to go back over a period of 10 years, and you might be able to bounce one to the other. It doesn't matter. We'll let people know. But I just wondered, first of all, what was the big takeaway for you, having been part of production for radio and then being the voice on some of the projects?
Wow, there were a lot of takeaways. There were there was the exciting takeaway of being able to be involved in a project like this that was on the radio and being broadcast around from, I guess you had said we ended up being syndicated?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So that was exciting.
And let people know that the syndication is that it's shared with other community and campus radio shows rather than sold or purchased.
Yes. Yeah. And that was also exciting to bring my students into the radio station, because we had, I taught that class of grade 5-6 students, and they were so excited to be able to be there and to be able to hear their voices on the radio. And I got to go into the radio station as well a bunch of times. So that was great. But emotionally, it affected me in quite a few ways. There were quite a few interviews that got to my heart more than they would have if I had have just read about it or had something happen in the classroom where we were just looking at a textbook. But because I was involved in our Stolen Sisters, I was able to bring guest speakers into the classroom. I was able to involve my students in a way that they wouldn't have been able to be involved if we hadn't have had like the real faces of the project there. So when I think about for instance, the Faceless Doll Project, where we had Dr. Mimi Harvard come in, looking at those dolls, it hit home for me and for so many of my students later when we said that could have been anyone. You know, the reason they're faceless is because you can picture it could have been your mother, your sister, your grandmother, your friend that is lost now. And when we talked about the missing and murdered Aboriginal women at the time in 2014, it was 1,100 reported cases, and I don't know how many now, but I expect double or more that we know about. So a lot of takeaways, a lot of impacts, and still impacting me today.
And now let's look at the projects where you brought the people into your classroom. So being involved in the Our Stolen Sisters project at CFRC, then that was an eight half-hour part series. Yes. That we did, where we interviewed people and talked with them about different situations relating to Aboriginal women who were lost, whether they were murdered, mm-hmm. or whether they were just lost, taken, and never connected with. The whole takeaway of that project was to try and encourage the federal government to do an inquiry to find out right across the country what's happening. Mm-hmm. What was the impact of that inquiry on you?
Well, it was shocking, to say the least.
That they did it?
It was shocking that they did it, and it was shocking the findings, and it was also shocking that the numbers were so high, yet knowing that they were going to be higher because these were only the reported numbers. Mm-hmm. So that was, that was difficult to deal with. I was glad that I had gone through this. We were able together to kind of process it, and then to continue to be involved. Mm-hmm. You know, things like the vigils for missing and murdered Indigenous women, they mean more now because I've had these conversations and because I've done the research, because, you know, we've done some practical things and I've had my students involved. So, yeah, it was... I think the fact that there were how many recommendations? Over 90? Is that right?
And you've caught me off guard. Yeah. How many? The TRC had 96, yes. recommendations. But the Missing and Murdered Women inquiry came up with many more than that, I think. So we'll get that and we'll let people know. But I'm seeing in your face also that it's still mm-hmm. impacting mm-hmm. you now, but also... you were careful not to carry some of that stress on individuals into your classroom.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you mentioned earlier about Mimi Harvard coming mm-hmm. in, and I remember when she came to your classroom, she had told me that she would probably only be there for about a quarter of a day.
Yes.
And the problem was that your children, the students that you had, were so...
Engaged
in it and respectful of her that mm-hmm. She ended up staying until almost the end of the school day. She had to race home to get someone off a school bus.
Yes.
And we understood because 100% of the students where you were teaching were bused.
Yeah.
Were almost 100%. And so I'm looking at someone like that coming in and you're seeing her and you're listening to her, but also... as I was doing, you're observing what's happening to her. She mm-hmm. was changing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice anything in your kids about that?
Yeah. Just that connection that they made because it was real. It was, you know, as I said, you can read about it or you can talk about it a little bit, but when you actually have someone come in and who is a member of an Indigenous group herself and who's speaking about... what has happened, and to also look at, it was the Faceless Doll project that she did. So not only that, we created, it was a creative way, it was a creative outlet for the students to be able to understand what this really means at a level at grade 5 and 6 that mm-hmm. they, yeah. you know, that's not too overwhelming or distressing for them. But they were able to have really great conversations. And the stats that she gave, mm-hmm. for instance, where I was actually just looking through the photos from that day back in 2014. The statistics back then were that Indigenous women are 8 times more likely than the general population to die on a reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that they were four times more of a level of violence on the reserves than in the general Canadian population. And those facts really hit home mm-hmm. for myself and for all of my students, boys and girls.
Now, I'm going to take that thread and keep going with it, mm-hmm. because you also brought in a local author to
yes.
the classroom who wrote several novels, but you were, I don't know that it was a novel that every one of your students could read, but I think you picked up on, maybe I'll just read it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a read aloud, yeah. definitely.
Yeah. And then you got almost to the end and you decided to invite that author into the classroom to meet the students.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about that whole process of bringing language into the classroom relating to mm-hmm. some of the issues that were happening.
Yeah, so the author was Rick Revelle, and he wrote three books now, I think. Is that right? I Am Algonquin. Oh, he's on his fourth.
He's got a fourth one out now, I think. By 2021, he had a fourth one.
Oh, I've got to get in contact to get the next one. He told me he'd always come into my classroom for free and give me his books.
There you go. Are you listening, Rick?
Yeah, Rick. I'll hold you to it. Yeah, so he came in, and the kids were so excited because they actually got to meet an author.
Mm-hmm.
And an author that we were reading in the class at the time. So he came in, and he also, it was a book about life in, when was it set? Quite a few hundred years ago. And it was historical fiction. And he drew in the native languages as well into it. So he was able to come in and talk about the pronunciations of the words. The kids learned different names for the different animals, and I'm trying to think of the Black Panther. It was the panther with the, what was his name? Oh, I can't remember. It started with an M, but he had those special spiritual qualities. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the kids loved it. And then when he came in his long, flowing black outfit and his hat, and then he brought in the spirit staff. Mm. For us as well, and gave it to us as a gift, which I still have,
hey.
And it stays in my hallway up the stairs. So he said, always keep it in an open location.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been definitely a conversation piece, not only in my classrooms but with my family as well.
So the other thing that I noticed about Rick Revelle being in the classroom was that the students had words up around the room,
yes.
with. I think they were Algonquin words at that
mm-hmm.
time. I Am Algonquin.
I Am Algonquin was
yeah.
the book.
And but I also know that Rick was asking you for ideas because he was going to talk to classrooms across the country.
Mm-hmm.
He did go to Manitoba and work with teachers and students in Manitoba and took some of the ideas from what he experienced through you. Did that have an impact on you as well, knowing that you were giving him some ideas?
Yeah. It's humbling, actually, to think that him coming into my classroom would encourage him to take these ideas to other classrooms.
Mm.
Yeah. I just thought that it was wonderful the way that the kids reacted to him as well as any of the guests that I brought into the classroom. The respect that they showed and the questions that they had. We always prepared very well in advance for the questions, and we'd write out all their ideas and just brainstorm. No question was a silly question. And he was so open to them and so forthright with what he wanted to discuss, and anything that they wanted to ask, he was able to talk openly about it, and he connected so well with the students.
Now, the next part that I'm thinking about, too, the extension of that,
mm-hmm.
is that you also had a guest, Janice Hill,
mm-hmm.
who is, in 2022, now the vice president and involved with the Indigenous Initiative at Queen's University,
mm-hmm.
and she has an opportunity. She's worked with university students, and she's worked with a school in Quinte Mohawk territory, and she's working now with staff and PhD students, and working on a whole lot of issues that administratively she's moved away from the teaching aspect. But I remember when she came in, and you have some pictures of that too, I think, but where and when she was presenting the Mohawk story, that some of the students in your class, you know, with the tree with the roots and everything that goes with it, the tree including all the animals that come to it and need it for protection, mm-hmm. for food, and you know, she was telling the story, and that was another one of those days where, well, I guess the only thing you probably have to stop and do is eat, because she captivated them, and they yes. wanted to do the activity she had, and they wanted to come together and ask questions.
Yes, yes, and they didn't want a break. They didn't need their body breaks. They didn't. They were in rapt attention the yeah. whole time. Yes,
it's amazing, isn't it?
To watch it that. Is. Yeah. yeah,
and that's because you've had this connection with CFRC and Aboriginal Voices, that it's changed your class. But also, we remember that one of your students came out with a poem. She wanted to add to our Stolen Sisters project.
Juliana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you would like, we'll play that poem, Juliana reading it to us. And this is back in 2014.
Yes, I would love that.
It doesn't matter what color your hair is. Doesn't matter how tall, short, wide, or slim you are. Everybody is beautiful, and you have to promise me no matter what, you will never change yourself from who you are because of someone else. You have to promise we, you, will never change anyone else by calling them names. Because names can hurt more than a punch in the gut or a slap on the face. Names can hurt more than a trip or a fall or a bump or a bruise. Names can make you feel weak. We need to put an end to this. Stop being a bystander and stand up, because if we don't, every day people will be called names. Every day people will be hurt. Every day people will feel weak. Don't let them destroy that little part of people that wants to be themselves. Don't wait for them to stand up as tall as they can so you can just push them back down again. Don't wait for them to catch their breath so you can make them lose it. Don't wait for them to be themselves so you can change them back to the people they're not. Everyone has a place in this weird thing we call others. Sometimes it just takes them a little longer to find it. Let them find it. Juliana Ramsey, grade 6.
Juliana Ramsey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she was in grade 6 at the time or grade 5?
She was. Grade 6. Yeah.
Okay. So Juliana Ramsey doing her poem that she wrote specifically for you to use mm-hmm. on Aboriginal Voices, our Stolen Sisters project. And it's very, very powerful to realize that you moved someone, and this wasn't a homework project, was it?
No, she did it of her own accord.
Mm-hmm. And then when we had called the parents to get permission to put it on the air, I don't know if they realized how important this poem was mm-hmm. to her and to the others in the class.
Yes, yes. Yeah, she was a bright light.
Mm-hmm. But were there other impacts within the class? Any other things that come to mind about the kids?
Well, there was one girl who, Alexis was her name, and she was, she self-identified as an indigenous descent, and she was very shy at first in the class, and as soon as we started bringing in guests and being more inquisitive about indigenous lives in general, she started to feel, I think, more comfortable to speak about her experiences and her life. And she brought me in this bag. It was a beautiful, she got it in Tiantanega. She lived there, I believe. And it was hand woven, and it had Turtle Island on the front. I still have it. And I think about her every time I use it. And it was incredible to see her blossom and her to know that she was in a really safe space to be able to discuss her life and her experiences, and to feel that the students actually had so many questions mm-hmm. for her as well, and she could be a bit of an expert in that domain as well.
I remember she brought in her regalia and
yes.
showed dancing.
Yes, yes.
We're not going to say anything about the coyote you had in your classroom.
Oh, right. Yes, for 2 years. Oh, my goodness. The kids loved
it
that.
It was safe. It was stuff.
Yes. And then Danka Brewer came in as well, and she made such an impact on those students. I had her in every year, and we made the commitment strings at the beginning of the year. So first week of school, I would have her in, and she would go to all the classrooms, all the junior grade classrooms at the school. And we did drum circles. We did, oh, my goodness, we did so many exciting activities. We went to the Aboriginal Day, June 21st, up in
Charbot Lake.
Charbot Lake, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I could just go on and on with all the guests we had. I think that year I had 13 different guests come into the classroom.
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
Now, that impact then has been part of your life as well,
mm-hmm.
but not as concentrated as that year. So, you know, how are you dealing with some of the reports that we get in 2022 about issues similar to what mm-hmm. you talked about, you know, from communities across the country?
Yeah. Well, some of the things still, to be honest, anger me to see that, I mean, back in 2014 when we were talking about the boil water warnings, for instance, and back then, I think it was Belleville, Tandanega, they had a boil water warning back then.
Yes.
And we still, across Canada, in this first world country, have areas that they still have to boil their water, and that infuriates me. So, but at the same time, I say, well, I'm angered, but what am I doing about it? So that's a question that I'm glad we're doing this, because, to be honest, because I walked away from teaching for 3 years, my own class, I also didn't keep up with what was happening with Indigenous women and lives. It was on the periphery, but it wasn't a key aspect of my life like it was when we were involved in Aboriginal Voices.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you brought this up again...
Oh, you're coming back to do some projects.
Yeah, I'm going through. Oh. I'm looking back at the Jamie Black's website. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe that good things are happening, but for me, I'm impatient, I guess, so it's not fast enough for what I want. And then I feel that I need to do more.
But you are doing it. You're doing it with your family and extended family and friends. And,
yes.
And if issues come up, you're there to kind of talk about it. And
on a small scale, I suppose.
There's been a big change in education in the Kingston area, we've seen, and I'm not sure about some of the other areas, but, you know, we have seen a huge change in the resources and the materials that are available, the guest speakers, so you know, you were on the vanguard of that, not knowing that you were going to be a vanguard of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't set out to say, I'm going to do this and it'll make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all the little things. It's what we tried to do and say at the beginning, when we're at the end of every show on our Stolen Sisters on Aboriginal Voices,
yes.
We said, what's one thing you could do, big or small, that may change ideas?
Yeah.
And you just described a whole lot for everybody that you touched. So,
yeah.
And I have to thank you for, on behalf of the Aboriginal Voices team, that we probably wouldn't made it through to that 8 without support from someone like you.
Well, thank you very much.
So, and then on a positive note, what advice would you give to some of the younger teachers getting out into learning about what's happening in the world, and they're going into teaching, they're not sure, should I be teaching about this or not about it? And you know, what advice would you give to them?
I would say just start small. Don't overwhelm yourself. Start having the conversations. Educate yourself. Bring in a guest speaker. Don't feel that you know it all. Bring in a guest who can share their life experiences, because it's always so much more authentic when you have somebody come in who's had these experiences. And look at some websites. Check out the Red Dress Project, Orange Shirt Day. Find out more about the programs that are offered in schools that way. Don't just make National Indigenous Education Month November and June and leave it at that, right? Mm-hmm. Bring it into your classroom, and in small ways, of course, as much as you can. And don't, I guess, be courageous, like have those courageous conversations. I know sometimes we doubt ourselves and our ability as teachers. Often we doubt ourselves and our ability. But just step out. Take the first step to have a conversation with someone about it, and maybe you'll even find a kindred spirit in your school who wants to walk alongside you, kind of like we did, and yeah, and start the journey together.
Carolyn, thank you very much. Chimigwech.
You're very welcome.
What's going on? What are you still working on? Tanya Dahas Gigon, the Nanze Watahun Sadache, Ungahuan, the Hadiwanodans, and the Aboriginal voices, Oscar Dewanyawa Oscar, Ned.